7 minutes past. Welcome to Sports Day. Looking forward to bringing one of the Tigers' greatest ever wingmen to the program. But first, Scoop, welcome to you.
Hello, Jared. Is Thursday night footy still on tomorrow night?
It's on tomorrow night.
Oh, I see.
But it's not on the following week, which is one of the most baffling decisions that we've seen. But it may take a bit of time.
You know what we... hello, everyone. Welcome to the program. You know what we failed to ask Matthew Lloyd about on Monday? Do you know who he compared... In fact, it was Damien Barrett on Lloydie's show, yep. Access All Areas. Do you know who he compared young Nick Cox at Essendon to?
Nick Cox at Essendon? I can't remember a wingman that tall and that quick.
No. No, but when you start comparing them to blokes who nearly won Brownlows, I thought, whoa, Damo's put the pressure on Nick Cox.
Well, a bloke who came runners-up in a Brownlow medal playing on the wing, Matthew Richardson, joins us. Richo, the only thing I'd say is, from what I understand and what I've seen, I reckon Nick Cox might just have you covered for kicking on both sides of the body. Welcome to you.
Absolutely. I commentated his first game in round one, and he laced one 60 metres on his non-preferred foot, and we all went, geez, how good's this kid? And then watching him run around the first month of the season, he's a little bit more athletic. He's got a bit more pace. He's got
I don't know if he's more athletic.
No, I don't think he's more athletic.
Selling yourself too much.
You lose credibility
but
that way.
You got to get the runs on the board. But no, he's a fantastic young player. I did hear that on Monday, and it's nice to hear nice things said about you.
Very quickly, rate the surprises, because I think the Bombers are in the category. I mean, you've got Melbourne and Sydney on top, virtually on top of the ladder, equal top of the ladder with no win, so they're on the podium. But to me, Essendon are one of the overachievers by the way they're looking, rather than just simply by the scoreboard and wins and losses.
Yeah, look, I think we all thought Melbourne would be better this year.
Yep.
We really did. So I'm not going to say that's a great surprise.
No.
Yeah, they've had some good wins and they're undefeated, and I think they're going really well. Sydney still, for me, is the biggest one. But Essendon are really competitive. The last 2 weeks, if you have a look at their numbers, there's some areas they've got to get right, but they're playing their young kids, and the young kids look really talented, and they've moved Carl Hooker forward. That's worked. Jake Stringer's got fit. So, yeah, you like what they're doing.
How many times, Jared, do you think Tom Harley played on the wing in his 198 games, in his illustrious
career? Oh, I'm sure he would have pushed up there at some stage.
Surely.
Following somebody like Richo from fullback or centre-half back up onto the wing. And Richo is here for Macca's, and you can try their new McSpicy and Palmer chicken burger. And Tom Harley is here just courtesy of the fact that he's been good enough to give us some of his time. Do you play too much? Play it all on the wing, Tom. Welcome.
Thanks, Jared, Sam and Richo. If I did end up on the wing, I was lost, or I was chasing Richo, which I had the privilege of doing a number of times. And I don't think creative wingman was in my my repertoire, Jared, unfortunately.
Did Richo ever get hold of you, Tom, or did you always keep him quiet?
No, good tussles.
Of course he did. He was, and I'm not just saying this because he's on the program and worked together, and Richard was a bloody hard opponent, no doubt about it, and always enjoyed those matchups. I was on the end of some lip from Nathan Brown, and between the two of them, Richard and Brownie, they were pretty good on the cheek, I reckon. Richard, that'd be a fair call, wouldn't it?
Well, we had to be good at something, Tommy, because we weren't winning many games.
Tom, it must be exciting. It was a tough year last year, lost a lot of money, and that always casts a shadow over the CEO. But I understand a lot of that is to do with turn-ups at gates, etc., in a COVID year when you weren't playing at home at all, essentially. This year, a difficult situation, but you've got this incredible brand or product to sell again, which has been one of the biggest surprises.
Yeah, it has. You're right, Jared. Last year, we obviously couldn't have meaningful crowds at the SCG for the couple of games we played there, and the competition obviously was moved out of Sydney altogether, and our business model is very dependent on casual ticket sales and membership revenue, and our members, particularly Sydney-based ones, they put their greatest value on going to the footy. We lost directly from not having games at the SCG about $7 million, so we were very exposed on that, and we've had to reset like everyone, and we're still doing that, but it's been great. We've had two home games at the SCG. We're basically at unrestrained crowds. We've got the overlay of COVID, but great to see the fans come back in, and great to see the bottom line start to improve as well, Jared. But it's a really exciting time to be part of the Sydney Swans at the minute.
Yeah, it certainly is, Tommy. You're playing great footy, and I'm sure plenty of people in Sydney want to get to the ground. What's the biggest issue you're still facing as far as getting people through the turnstiles at the SCG? There are a number of issues down here, and you add them all up, and I think that means the crowds are still a little bit off down here. But what's any of the issues you're facing up there still?
Oh, look, I think the two things have been, I guess, just the fans and members getting used to the digital ticketing and understanding that you've got to provide details and set up accounts and you've got to have a reserved seat. And so that was probably a bit of a work in progress, particularly our first home game in Adelaide, where we're at 75% capacity. We got just shy of 25,000 of that crowd. Thursday night game, we had just shy of 29,000. The behaviour of the fans and members is starting to shift and they're getting used to that. So there's that COVID overlay. And I think the other one, Richo, which we're all unsure of, is just how comfortable fans are back in amongst crowds. But our fans have really enjoyed it, and we've got the Giants on a beautiful time slot of twilight game, Saturday twilight, 4:40 start, and expecting a crowd north of 30,000. So it's starting to tick over well for us at the moment.
It's been of some frustration to a lot of our listeners and to me, because there hasn't been anything done about it, Tom. But, you know, we've got a similar scenario down here. We haven't had a COVID community transmission for the best part of 50 days, and yet we're still unable to walk up to the stadium and buy a ticket, and we've still got a chained-up stadium, which seems to be the greatest frustration of all. I know that we're under trial at the moment down here to try and get this magical number of 100%, but in reality, that's going to affect one game in the next 5 months. The government and the AFL and the DHHS, they've got to unlock the stadium. I don't know why it has to be locked up when you don't have to register at shopping centres at all. Just confirm, though, you have got an unlocked stadium. If you buy a ticket up to 75%, and you are at 100% now if you really want to, you can sit where you like to.
Yeah, we are. You can buy a ticket, you can walk up, and you'll get a reserved seat. But we're unrestrained. And I've got to say, as I say, the behavioural patterns of the fans and members are adjusting to having a digital ticket. So that's been the first part. But I haven't lived through the Victorian and Melbourne experience, and obviously big chunks of that time last year would have been extremely traumatic. I'm absolutely hats off to the New South Wales government. Gladys Berejiklian, with the Premier up here, has been extremely pragmatic. Health and economy have been the key drivers for all decision making, but the state's remained relatively open, and certainly that's been a key push for the sports stadium up here. And as I say, we've had to shift a few behaviours, but if you want to come to the footy, you can come to the footy and you can sit with your mates. And it's been a really positive start to the season in that regard for us.
Can I ask you, how many people do you estimate or guesstimate that Buddy Franklin is worth when he turns up and plays?
Oh, geez, that is a good question, Jared.
I had one CEO of another club tell me it was 5,000 plus.
It could be. I'd love to be more specific and quantify, but what I can say, Jared, is he obviously played the Adelaide game, and there was a real buzz around that at a 75% capacity. He didn't play down in Melbourne against the Tigers. But we knew very early on in the piece that it was clearly a management play for us, and he was always going to play against the Bombers on the Thursday. And when we announced that on the Monday, certainly added to the tailwinds with the excitement around some of the kids. And when he took that mark with 90 seconds to go to get us a kick and a half in front, the place was heaving. He's such a magnetic character, isn't he? Really, really great to see him back to full fitness and health at the moment, and looking forward to a good hit out from him on Saturday afternoon.
Tom, well done on the start to the year. I'm not sure if you heard Nathan Buckley's comments about academies, and I know it's been talked a little bit about. Now the competition is inherently uneven. We know that. Victorian clubs have a pretty big advantage. You guys have to travel more. You have to play the grand final. You've got at the MCG, you've got the cost of living. But separate all that, do you think that a player that spends 4 years in your academy is better prepared to play AFL football than a Victorian kid who goes through school footy, the TAC Cup, and then lands, you know, at Collingwood?
Better prepared to enter the AFL? Not necessarily, Sam. I mean, the academy at the pointy end, let's say the under 18 before their draft year, is akin to a TAC Cup program. So from that point of view, no. The fact that they've been in the same program in, let's just be transparent and talk about Braden Campbell and Errol Gordon since they were 11 years old. There's a familiarity around that, a familiarity with the club, etc. And we invest significantly in our academy to prepare the top-end players to enter the AFL, whether that be for us or someone else. And, so that, you know, they have a good program, they have a good strength and conditioning program, they have a good nutritional program, they have good life skill and well-being programs as well. So from that end, I hope they do. And I hope they are well prepared to enter the AFL. Advantage? No, not for others to make a comment on that. But it is extremely important for the development of the game. And we've had 3,000 boys and girls through our academy in 11 years. With 15 that have ended up on lists, what's that, 0.05% strike rate. So the rest filter off into community football and volunteer roles, etc. So no, clearly we're staunch supporters of it.
That's why CEO Jared and Richard, he can do that maths in his head.
I like
but
that.
It is exciting to see the Swans going well for the national competition.
No doubt.
Tommy, it's been a great start to the year. And just with your ball movement and a footy question, it's really exciting to watch, and it is a bit of a change-up for the Swans. How big a part has Dom Pike played in that? Because it just reminds me, Adelaide moved the ball so well when they were firing under him in 2017.
Yeah, look, you know, I guess the coaching structure, we've had a lot of change in our football department. We've actually got about 60% new staff across all of the roles within football. And the coaching department has shrunk in terms of the number of assistant coaches, and Don's come in, Benny Matthews has come in from Melbourne. And they put a lot of time and effort around October. You know, they locked themselves away for 4 and 5 weeks and did an audit on what we do and did an audit on what the competition's doing and had a look at the list and looked at a few positional changes, et cetera. And it's you know, Don had significant input into that. John's the senior coach that has the most input in that. So his contribution has been terrific. I think if you watched us last year, particularly when we were playing up in Queensland and Cairns, we had moments where we were certainly shifting towards that style of play and maximising the talents that we had on our list. And as I say, a few structural positional changes led to that as well. So, look, I don't think it's been as black and white or as binary as what people are suggesting, that it's just Don Pike in, Swans playing this style of football. I think it's evolved over time and we're still maturing as a list. So, but in saying all that, he's been a great addition to our footy club, and I know John and Don work extremely well together.
Tom Harley is the CEO of the Sydney Swans. He joins us live on Sports Date. Jared, we've got Tom on, so I better ask him the annual question, shouldn't I?
Which is?
Tom, Joe Danaher. Let's go back to that.
Yeah.
Now, I just want to preface this by saying, I think we all believe and hope that Joe will have an excellent career at the Brisbane Lions. But you have to admit, Tom, it's a sliding doors moment. You look at the draft haul that you've taken in last year and this year. If you had have gotten Joe, it would have significantly impacted that.
It could have. I mean, it was, you know, we clearly were keen players for Joe at the end of 2019. He was keen to come to the Swans, and we couldn't get a deal done in the end, which would have involved, obviously, Carlton and Essendon. But obviously, it wasn't part of the plan for 2020. And respectfully, you know, Joe's up at Brisbane. I think he started really well. And most importantly for Joe and those of us who know him, looks like he's really enjoying it again. But he's not with the Swans. And we've got that one off the bat early in round one against the Lions. And clearly our list strategy at the moment is about investing in the younger players that we've got. And we have gone to the draft pretty heavily in the past few years and really confident about the group that we've got. Let's call it 23, 24 and under. Obviously extremely well led by some of our senior players. So certainly a retention play for us moving forward is our immediate focus. And we think we've got some really good young players. And if you're talking specifically about Logan McDonagh, we think that he's going to be a good player for us for a long time.
I think specifically what Scoop was saying, Tom, is you got out of jail. So let's move on. Go ahead, Richard.
Yeah, no, we love Logan McDonagh. Tommy, a big game this week. The Giants found a bit of form last week, and I was really looking forward to Rampy v maybe Toby Green. Unfortunately, Dane's injured himself. Can you give us an update on him?
Yeah, Dane actually broke his finger a couple of weeks ago at training. And for those of us who know Dane, it's not surprising that he's been able to play the last couple of weeks. And it was really, it's a fracture below his knuckle. So it was about how functional he could be and whether it would heal naturally as much as he could make a fist. He couldn't do that, so he's opted for surgery. He's an extremely important player for us. His development as a leader, which has been unbelievable, and quite ironic that it was his hand at the end that touched the ball on the line against the Bombers to give us the 4 points. But he'll be sorely missed. He'll be out for 3 or 4 weeks, and that provides an opportunity for someone to pick up the slack. And the back line's been settled. Georgie Hewitt's moved down there. He's a strong, task-oriented player. Tommy McCartan's developed into what we think is a really good, strong, long-term key position player. So it'll give an opportunity to someone come in, but Dane will certainly be missed.
And the big question is, who is that someone to come in? Now, I'm just going to paint a picture here, Tom, as you leave us. Himmelberg, Finlayson, and Jesse Hogan play, Richard. That's three talls. So there's no Alia and there's no Rampy. You've got McCartan and you've got Malekin. The only other key defender I can think of that's in Sydney right now is your good self. You're in good shape.
Jared, I went for a walk to grab some lunch today, and I ran into Benny Matthews,
right?
Who's our defensive coach. He was looking pretty good, and I asked him whether he was lining up to replace Ranch. And he went straight to me and said, "How are you feeling?" I said, "I'm up for it. I've been training, so we'll see how we go."
It's a big story if it comes to fruition.
Cade Simpson, eat your heart out. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, I think it's inspired by Cade Simpson.
Tom, great to have you on. It's so good to see the Swans up and firing. Good luck in, not sure if it's called the Battle of the Bridge still, but good luck in the local derby against the Giants.
Nah, thanks, guys. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks, Tom.
Tom Harley there, the boss of the Sydney Swans. Don't forget APCO, where you can get fresh food and award-winning barista-made coffee. It's 24/7. More with Rich after this.